last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Gary Numan is still working, he's still performing, and he's coming to Ireland later this year to play the Three Olympia in Dublin and also the Waterfront Hall Auditorium in Belfast. Gary Numan, thank you very much for joining us on The Last Word.
Oh, my pleasure. How are you doing?
Very well. So tell us, you're coming to celebrate the 45th anniversary of the Telecon album. Just for those who may not be familiar with it, I mean, that was a really groundbreaking 1980s album. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, it was the fourth one I'd made in about 2 years, I think. So I was kind of churning stuff out a bit more back then than I do now. It slowed down a bit. But it was the album before, I'd gone heavily into just using synthesizers. There was no guitars on it at all. And I felt that was, it just made it a little bit colder than I really wanted. So with Telecon, I went back to guitars and I tried to make it heavier. The problem I was having at the time was I'd got successful the year before and I hadn't really taken to it very well. I wasn't particularly enjoying that side of it, you know. And so a lot of the lyrical side of Telecon is me really talking about that experience and not being overly happy with it, and trying to find a different way forward, really. So when I did Telecon, I actually retired for a year or two after that, just to give myself some space and try to understand what had happened. I've got Asperger. I'm on the autism spectrum, so I found that particularly difficult at that time, and I think a lot of that is coming through on Telecon as well. So I was really proud of it, and I was really glad that I made it, but it certainly was made in a period that I wasn't particularly enjoying things or comfortable with where I was.
And then how do you enjoy performing it now?
Well, I don't do it very often. This is the first time I would have done the album in its entirety for a very long time, or even more than just one or two songs from it. So I'm going to have to try to remember how some of it goes, actually, because I don't really listen to it very much. But the whole thing about what I do now, I mean, I've been doing it for 45, 46 years now. So all the problems I had when I very first started are long gone, you know, decades gone. I mean, I love it now. I'm very comfortable with it. I've been doing it for my entire adult life, and a bit more, actually. And I just, you know, I'm as comfortable doing it now as I am eating a dinner. So it's a very, very, very different situation to when I actually made the record a long time ago. So sometimes when you listen back to songs that you wrote when you were a different person, so to speak, it can be a little bit embarrassing, you know, the way you saw things then and the way you wrote about them. So yeah, we'll see, but I was pretty proud of it when I made it, and I think it's stood up reasonably well. But I'm not actually a massive fan of nostalgia, you know, so when I've done this, I won't touch it again for a few more years. Probably when it's 50, I'll look at it again. I'm much more interested in where I'm going next than what I've done in the past. So I only ever do these sort of nostalgic kind of shows very, very rarely when it's a specific or key anniversary of a particular record, and only for a record that did really, really well. Like Telecon was number one when it came out, so it sort of deserves some kind of celebration at this point. But I don't really like going back and revisiting the past very much at all.
Well, can you indulge me though for a little while if I do want to go back and sort of suggest to you that the 80s musically were largely defined by the use of synthesizers and electronic music. And you really, for many people, kicked that off in 1979 with tracks like Our Friends Electric and also Cars, which I think was a number one hit as well back at the time. Tell us a little bit about how you actually developed that sound at the time, how you were something of a trailblazer. What got you interested in making that type of music?
It was luck. I went to a studio. I was in a band called Tubby Army, which was initially a punk band, three-piece punk band. And we went to a studio to make our debut punk album, or the demos for it anyway. And I went into the studio to say hello to the man that ran it, a man called Mike Kemp, while the other blokes in the band were unloading all the equipment. And in that control room, as I was speaking to Mike and introducing us, there was a synthesizer in the corner, a thing called a Mini Moog. I'd never seen a real one before. I was fascinated by that. But I had no real interest in electronic music. I'd heard a few bits of it, you know, Kraftwerk and some other things. And although I sort of liked it, I didn't like it enough to want to do it. I was still very much a guitar-based person. But I played that. He very kindly let me have a go of that synthesizer. And I couldn't play keyboards, you know, so I'm just pressing one key. And the sound that came out of it was so amazing. I'd never heard anything like it. And on that, in that moment, you know, by the time the band members had finished unloading the gear and setting stuff up, I'd already decided to change everything. You know, electronic was where I was going to be going. And I had to go back to the record company and convince them that this punk band that they'd signed was gone, really, and it was this new thing now, and I really had to argue my way forward to get that first album released, because it wasn't what they wanted at all. So it really was just an absolute piece of luck, happened to be in the right place at the right time, and then recognized that for me that was the instrument that would work best for me. You know, I'm more interested in sound than I am in music, if that makes any sense at all.
Explain that to me.
Well, I don't care too much for scales. You know, I still, if you told me to play a G chord on a piano, I still don't know how to do that. I know what a G note is, but I don't know what the chord is. I don't play really much at all, but I love noises. I like sounds. And the thing that I've done over the years is find ways of making sounds musical. So I can play a bit, you know, I can play a bit of guitar, and I can play a bit of keyboards now, and a little bit of this and that, but I'm not really good at any of it. You know, I wouldn't get a job in someone else's band as a guitar player unless they were pretty average. And so that's not been where my focus has been. My focus is on noises, weird sounds, strange little things that, you know, like when you go to see a film, sometimes there'll be this amazing sound that comes out when, you know, when the mothership comes over, something like that. That sort of thing really excites me. I love that sort of thing. And it's, my sort of career has been spent pretty much entirely looking for those sorts of sounds that are really exciting and really interesting, and then finding a way of making that musical and then wrapping music around it. So I still struggle to see myself as a musician. I think of myself as an arranger of noises, an arranger of sounds, and I'm still, like I said, I'm still an average player at best, and I've been doing it for 50 years or so now.
And do you like performing?
Yeah. I struggled a bit to begin with because I knew I wasn't very good at it. And so it took me a while to get the experience and the confidence that you sort of need to be able to strut around up there and actually enjoy it, you know, not worry about what's coming next. But, you know, all the things that you worry about, you know, falling over, forgetting the words, singing the wrong song, you know, falling off the stage, having things fall on you, all those things have happened now because I've been doing it forever. You know, and they're not as bad as you think they're going to be when they happen. And that experience that you build up through that, and the amount of shows that I've done, it's so many. You just get comfortable with it. You know, I'm as used to being on stage as I am walking into my local Tesco's or whatever. It's just a normal thing for me now, and it doesn't feel stressful. It just feels good fun and exciting, and I love it now in a way that I didn't, to be honest, when I first started. So I find the whole thing now is more enjoyable. You know, I appreciate when things go well now. I really appreciate them. If an album gets in the chart, that's an amazing thing for me. Whereas when it's happening before, I was kind of taking it for granted because it all seemed to happen so quickly and so easily. I appreciate things more now than I ever did before. I enjoy performing more than I ever did before. I like the whole life of being in a band. You know, you're on the bus and you're with all your friends and you're doing these gigs every night. It's just a great way to live your life, really.
You mentioned earlier about Asperger's. I mean, has that been a power for you as well, perhaps, in the construction of the music that you have done?
I believe it has, yeah. It's difficult to pin down exactly how it has a bearing on it. But I mean, I'm very aware that I interact with the world differently, at arm's length in some respects. But I think the real benefit of Asperger's to me hasn't necessarily been the way it affects your creativity, although it definitely does. It's the way you're able to handle the disappointments, the setbacks that come along. You know, I'm able to compartmentalize emotion in a way that my wife finds really annoying and sometimes upsetting, you know, when she needs a lot of comfort. I'm not very good at knowing when those moments are and how to behave in those situations. So I know that I'm a terrible person to be with if you're going through something really unpleasant. But I'm a pretty good person to be with in other situations. But that ability to compartmentalize emotion, it is a fantastic strength when things are not going well. You don't get sort of crushed by things. You're able to just keep forging through and push all those disappointments and obstacles to one side and just keep going. I'm not crushed. I don't turn to drink or to drugs or any of those sorts of things. I'm very, very focused on where I'm going. And I think a lot of the strength of that comes from my autism.
There's a listener who's a regular correspondent to the programme, Shane and Talla, who's just texted in, "Gary, it's great to hear you on with Matt. I feel like I know you kind of because your wife Gemma is my cousin. Haven't got a ticket yet, but hoping to see you in the Three Olympia in December. Great to hear you and love the Sky documentary." I didn't see the Sky documentary. What can you tell us about that?
Oh, it was the documentary that just looked back on the career, but it led up to me getting back to Wembley. So it was sort of charting not just the life in general, but and particularly my life with Gemma and how she's had a massive influence on me and helped me to sort of resurrect the career from the early 90s, which she absolutely did, and still there now. You know, she's there every step of the way. We do everything together and share everything. But it also looked at this long sort of dream I'd had to get back to. When I retired before, back in 81, I retired at Wembley, did three shows at Wembley, and then realised I'd made this terrible mistake, and I spent the next 40-plus years trying to get back to being big enough to play at Wembley again, and did it a few years ago. And that show was coming up, and so this Sky documentary looked at that and the build-up to that and what it meant to me and so on. So it is quite a cool thing, actually. I was quite pleased with it.
And tell us a little bit more about Gemma. If Shane says he's a cousin of Gemma, is she Irish?
Yeah, she's an O'Neill. Yeah.
Okay.
From Dublin. Her family, she's actually born in London, but her mum and dad are both from Dublin. I think mum was from Cavan. Dad was from Dublin. Both died now, sadly. But yeah, she's she did the ancestry DNA thing, 100% Irish. She hates the English. doesn't hate them. She married one, but yeah, she does not see herself as English at all. She sees herself as Irish and is quite ferocious about it.
How did you meet her?
Well, she's a fan, so she would come to the shows regularly. So I knew her very, very vaguely from just signing things for her, and she sort of stood out because she was in extremely good looking and just a really lovely person. And she would come to everything. And then at one particular tour, she wasn't there at all. And she was just sort of noticed by her absence, really. And then right at the end of it, she turned up. And that was when I had my very first ever conversation with her. And I said, I normally see you at all the gigs, but you've not been at this one, on this tour. What happened? And she said that her mum was in hospital and her mum was dying, and this is the first time she'd been out, and she was back to the hospital that night. And so it was really sad, actually, but that's how I got to meet her and actually have a conversation. And then I heard sometime later that her mum had died, and I think illegally got her phone number out of the fan club data. I'm pretty sure that would be illegal today anyway.
Yeah, that would breach GDPR, definitely.
Yeah, so I've been in trouble, but it wasn't there then, so I was all right. So I got a phone number and I rang her up and said, I heard what's happened and I'm really sorry. I have to go and do this radio thing way up north, so it's a long drive. Do you want to come with me? And that was it. So she came with us and we chatted all the way there and all the way back. And then, by the time I got halfway there, I'd realised that she was very special. She's an incredible personality, an incredible character, and larger than life sort of person, and I just loved her from that day onwards.
How long ago was that? How many years are you together?
That was 1992. So yeah, we've been married 28 years this year, been together 33.
So she'll definitely be coming to Dublin with you in December.
I hope so. Yeah, she's actually in hospital at the moment, having something quite serious fixed. But I'm going to come pick her up this afternoon. So she's been there a week.
Oh well, we wish her the best.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay. Gary Newman, it's been great meeting you. It's been great having you. As I said, your music certainly was part of my teenage years. And I must go back and listen to Telecon again now on the way home when I'm walking home later on this evening. We're going to play out with one of those tracks from Telecon, We Are Glass. Gary Newman, thank you for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you. Bye-bye.
The Last Word on Today FM.